This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Let's go around the NFL to keep you in the loop. Brought to you by Texas First Bank on Sports Radio 610.
All right, what's going on in Indianapolis? Let's take a trip out there. Talk to a friend of the show. He covers the squad. Got the big time morning show out there. Kevin Bowen, a host of Kevin and Q out there
Kevin.
at 107.5. The Fan. Kevin, how you living, my friend?
I'm living. Yeah, we got the Indy 500 this week, so it's always a big event for us.
But, what's that? Yeah, what's the Indy 500? What is that? What sport is that?
So you got IndyCar racing. So not NASCAR, not F1. IndyCar, they go fast. 33 cars. Kind of one of the more, I think, legendary single-day sporting events. The biggest in the world. 300,000 people will be in attendance. So, weather's looking good. So. We're excited.
There we go. What about the football team? Nick Foles is reunited with Frank Reich. I don't know how much to make of this. I guess it all kind of depends on how Matt Ryan plays. So I just want to ask you, like, on a scale of Andrew Luck to Jacoby Brissett to Phillip Rivers to Carson Wentz, like, where do you think Matt Ryan's going to fall on that scale?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say probably a step above Carson Wentz. I don't know if he's quite at Phillip Rivers' level. I think it's a big question just kind of where, what rung on the ladder Matt Ryan is still at. You know, in a vacuum, you could probably look at some things last year and say Matt Ryan was poorer than Carson Wentz at quarterback. Obviously, different systems around Carson Wentz in Indy and Matt Ryan in Atlanta. So what the Colts are banking on is you come here and you have a 2,000-yard rusher in Jonathan Taylor and you're behind a better offensive line, you're going to play better at quarterback. I would say the pass weapons, though, I mean, you can make the argument that Atlanta probably had better weapons than what Matt Ryan's going to have to deal with here in Indianapolis. So basically the Colts looked at Carson Wentz. The owner hated him, thought it was an epic disaster from day one, and was very hesitant to begin with, hated the vaccine decision by Wentz, and couldn't get rid of him quick enough. And they look at Matt Ryan, and they think the professionalism, and again, these are kind of their words behind the scenes, the professionalism is at a higher level, and that will improve this team from a floor standpoint and, you know, hopefully get them back into the playoffs.
Now, obviously, they've done their homework with Matt Ryan, and they know him, but it is a new system. I don't care, you know, you've been in the league and you're 37 years old or whatever. How has that been going early on? I know they're just really kind of getting there now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I mean, this is the first time in Matt Ryan's career that he's in a new building. He's changed offensive coordinators over the time in Atlanta, but I think he would admit this is probably the biggest playbook system change as well. So I do think that is a little bit of a hurdle. If you want to go system change, the Colts also have a new defensive coordinator. That's a little bit more of a substantial change going from Matt Eberflus to Gus Bradley. But I think really the main issue for me, Matt Ryan related, is less kind of can he handle the playbook, but more of just, you know, who's he throwing the ball to? I mean, Michael Pittman and Mo Alie-Cox are your top two pass catchers right now, and then it's a very unproven group. You guys know who the oldest pass catcher is for the Colts right now?
Who would that be?
Kiki Kuti.
Not a baby.
Oh, there you go. tell him we said what's up. Tell him we said what's up.
Definitely will. So that's where things are at right now in the pass catching room here in Indianapolis.
As far as Kevin Bowen joining us from 107.5, the fan out there in Indianapolis, you mentioned Jim Irsay being pissed off and not liking the Carson Wentz thing a long time. I do a schedule simulation every year, and it's an exaggerated, to say the very least, it's an exaggerated simulation of how the schedule goes. But after week one, the Colts lost to the Texans and Frank Reich got fired. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But how is the pressure up on Frank Reich, given the fact that he was the one pounding the table for Carson Wentz, and given the fact that Jim Irsay, I watched the McAfee show, and he went on like an 8-minute rant about the Jags' loss, and it was months after the fact. Like, let's say the Colts come up short this year in the postseason. Like, we know Jim Irsay is an emotional guy. Like, is the pressure up a notch on Ballard and Frank Reich?
You know, it's funny you say all that. I guess I'll start here. The last time the Colts won a season opener was 2013.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for some hope in Houston, the last time they beat a week one opponent, Terrell Pryor was the opposing quarterback, and the Raiders were in Oakland. So there you go. You know, to the whole hot seat and all of that, to answer your question in short, no. Jim Irsay is obsessed with Chris Ballard and Frank Reich. And as much venom as you saw in that Pat McAfee interview, and as much as your A plus B sort of scenario works in that Frank Reich wanted Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz didn't work out, so shouldn't the owner be mad at the guy that wanted him? For some reason, Jim Irsay just has this incredible affinity for these two guys. It probably is the analogy that doesn't make the most sense in Houston because it's warm down there, but you know, for those that got the little seat warmers going on, and there's kind of three levels to the seat warmers in people's car, I have no issue in those seat warmers being on one, two levels here in Indianapolis. You know, if you look at the resumes, Chris Ballard and Frank Reich, just strictly win-loss, you know, the guys before them got fired for far more wins, especially postseason wins, in Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano. Now, there's a disconnect there, and there are some issues internally that also contributed to that. But, you know, when you play in by far the easiest division in the AFC and you haven't been able to take advantage of that, I get the quarterback domino effect. There is a little bit of they are at fault for not trying to go long-term instead of wanting to go Band-Aid, I guess, in Matt Ryan. So, again, to answer it all, Irsay does not believe they're on the hot seat. And, of course, he's the only one that matters. He just extended them through like 2025 or 2026 before the start of last year. But in my eyes, I do think there needs to be a little bit more accountability from the top down.
Well, how long does that last? And presuming, Matt Ryan is okay, what if he starts out bad? And Landry and I were talking about that. What if they go 1-3 and he's not playing well? And Nick Foles, by the way, is, waiting in the wings. How long does that last?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think that's a big issue I have as well. You know, I get Nick Foles as the backup. Again, in a 1-2 game, you know, we need a stopgap to save the season. Okay, Nick Foles' resume shows you something there. But, you know, when you look around the league right now, you know, Tampa Bay, they draft Kyle Trask, you know, a couple of years ago. You know, Green Bay with the Jordan Love situation. You know, Pittsburgh late in the Big Ben era drafted Mason Rudolph where they did. The Colts really haven't done that. Like, the Colts' young QB on their roster is Sam Ellinger. Well, you know, you guys obviously have seen Sam
Winner,
a lot.
There is
a defined ceiling, I think, with Sam. So I think that remains the elephant in the room, is when are you going to take a swing at the long-term quarterback? It's funny, when you don't take that swing, then in a way your fan base and people can't really get mad at you for screwing it up. And I almost feel like that's been a little bit of their approach. They've kind of been like, no, Andrew Luck retires. Hold on. Let's go stopgap here. Let's go stop, you know, let's go Band-Aid again here. Like, they've been just trying to kind of patchwork it together, and it hasn't really led to the desired results with that. Like, Matthew Stafford is different than some of these quarterbacks that they've tried, or Tom Brady, of course, is different than some of these quarterbacks they've tried over the last few years. So, if things go bad with Ryan, you know, you're back to square one. And yeah, next year it's a deeper quarterback draft class. But still, you know, if things don't go great, I don't look at the team winning four games. And, you know, if Houston's drafting one, if Seattle's drafting two, like, there's no guarantee that just because, you know, you win 7 or 8, that quarterback's going to fall to you. There could be teams above you that certainly won a quarterback.
Talking to Kevin Bowen on the Flying Fish Restaurant Hotline, trying to figure out what's going on in Indianapolis. This was Nick Foles, like, I think it was 7 months ago. It just doesn't sound like a guy who is ready to be a backup just yet. This was him in Chicago, and this was after he talked about how much he liked Frank Reich. But this just, it seems like a guy who still feels like he can play at a high level. Here was Nick Foles when he was with the Bears.
I feel great. The version of me right now is much better than the version that played in the Super Bowl. I'll tell you that. And I'm confident in that. So put that through your mind. I know that. I know what this game's about. You have to have the whole package as a team. Like, you have to have everyone in there. You have top down has to be great. If it's not great, you're going to be mediocre. I've seen it. I've been a part of it. And unfortunately, when you're a quarterback, you got to go through a lot of the, you know, baloney. But that's part of it. That's why we play this position. That's why we grow. Because at the end of the day, there might be some kid that's watching this press conference and they say, Nick Foles is a three quarterback and he's going out there and his mentality is to dice up that defense and help his teammates. And that's what I will continue to do till I lace up the cleats for the last time.
It just seems like he feels like he still has a little bit left in the tank. How important is it going to be for him to just go in there and just be willing to kind of watch Matt Ryan? And as Matt Ryan struggles, I just wonder, like, what would it take for Frank Reich to make the change? Like, what would Matt Ryan have to do? Would it be like some wet, like a wet stretch or what? Like, at what point would it happen?
Yeah, it'd have to be pretty drastic. I mean, obviously, from a physical standpoint, Ryan's really never battled injuries. I think he's missed 3 games in his career. I think it's 1 in the last decade plus. So, you know, I don't think he's going to be banged up a whole lot. It would have to get pretty ugly. I get the Nick Foles comments. I think a lot of that was Chicago-driven, frustration being in that environment with Fields and Dalton at the time. And I think at the time Wentz was hurt. He broke his foot in training camp last year, so he was kind of itching to get out the door if he could there. Man, it would really have to go ugly. You know, some sort of lose to Houston, lose to Jacksonville out of the gate, then 3, 4, 5. Kansas City, Tennessee, and Denver. That's who the Colts have to start the year. I mean, you'd have to be looking at 1-4, and this guy's thrown a ton of picks, and Father Time has caught up to him. Because, you know, as much as Nick Foles has the magical run, and, you know, I've always said this. I know I've said this to you guys last spring at the time of the Wentz trade. Carson Wentz was the son that Frank Reich never had. I know that sounds weird and creepy, but I firmly believe that. Take it another step further with Nick Foles. Like, Nick Foles wrote a book on his journey and all that. The guy who wrote the foreword to the book was Frank Reich. So there is a love for Nick Foles, but, you know, since the Super Bowl, he's 3-9 as a starter. You know, it's once you see that guy in there for more than a month or two, I think you know what you got. So it would really have to get ugly, I think, for them to turn to him.
You mentioned this earlier about Kiki QT. What would Matt Ryan's targets be, you know, at this point, and what would you assess them as?
Yeah, well, Michael Pittman is the obvious one, and yeah. He's your 1,000-yard wideout. The number two guy, I mean, you know, you would think, I guess, is going to be Alec Pierce, the rookie out of Cincinnati who they took 53rd overall. If healthy, which I know Kuti falls into this group, Paris Campbell, a second-round pick out of Ohio State from 3 years ago and now 4 years ago, he would be an option, but, you know, Campbell scored a touchdown against Houston last year at Lucas Oil. He broke his foot on that play. I think he's missed, I want to say in 3 years, he's played in 15 games and he's missed 30-some games or whatever the math is on that. So it's just a lot of unproven guys. They've got some taller day 3 draft picks from a few years ago. They're young at tight end. They drafted Jelani Woods in the 3rd round out of Virginia. Woods played at Oklahoma State. Kind of a quarterback tight end before transferring to UVA and becoming more of a top target. So it's probably the most unproven pass catching group in the NFL, really, when you look at it.
When you were on the air, because we were live when it happened, talking to Kevin Bowen on the Flying Fish Restaurant Hotline, covers the Colts better than anyone else. What was your reaction when you saw that you got multiple draft picks for Carson Wentz? Because we didn't know what the hell was going on there. We just assumed that there was going to have to be a cut or something like that. Like, what was y'all's immediate reaction to that?
Well, I'll just say this. Ron Rivera's reaction to what he saw happen once the Colts got Matt Ryan for that price and once what they got for Carson Wentz is it was quite the reaction from the Washington head coach to fully understand, be like, wait, we paid what for Carson Wentz and you guys paid what? for Matt Ryan, because it was only a third-round pick for Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
And yet the Colts got a second, a third, and Washington paid all $28 million of the wins. You know, like at some point, organizations and franchises continue to act like the reason that they are the laughing stock of the NFL. And if you're making a list of the laughing stock franchises in the NFL, you don't get very far down the list before you put Washington. So, yeah, I was stunned, absolutely stunned by it. The Colts would have cut Carson Wentz. They would have cut him the very next week when the new league year started. He was due the extra amount of money. I don't know how Chris Ballard and, you know, Frank Reich and whoever else were able to pull that off, let alone doing it to an NFC East team. Like, you know, that aspect to it and the Philadelphia Carson Wentz thing, I wish I had some words to explain it. It is shocking. It's stunning. And the Colts should count their prayers every night that Washington did that.
Well, it was crazy around here as well. Kevin Bowen on the Flying Fish Restaurant hotline. No more Hard Knocks for you guys. You said you're not going to get to see yourself on Hard Knocks this year.
Yeah, and a couple of nice little appearances there. I think the Colts lost every episode after they put our show on that, so we didn't show up late in the season, which the Colts still ended up losing. But, yeah, Arizona I saw is going to be the team.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Arizona will change their ways of the second half of the year. The Colts certainly crippled down the stretch there with that. I don't know how you guys feel. I mean, I liked it. I think Colts fans in general liked it. I feel like you're kind of looking for an excuse if you really want to blame it on Hard Knocks for them losing their last two games. But I think it's really cool that each week, you know, the fan base gets to see a little bit behind the scenes stuff. And sure, you know, each team's got editorial control over what goes out final, you know, the final cut, if you will. But Arizona makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, the Kyler Murray, the Kingsbury, the Watt, all of it. They're playing international late. I think they go to Mexico City late in the year. So, yeah, all that makes sense. But the Colts, I think, reluctantly said yes. And I don't think they were too eager to do it again, although I think it was pretty good PR for them.
All right, there we go. Kevin, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for giving us an update on what's going on there. We're about 2 months away from training camp, and then the real fun begins.
You bet, guys. Always enjoy it.
All right. It's your guy Kevin Bowen here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610. Coming up, Nick Caserio unsolicited.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned a college football player's name, and it got me to thinking, are we underestimating the negative impact on NIL, or is this one of the best things that's been added to a sport in a long, long time? We'll get into that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
$3.5 million. Goodness gracious. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. NIL, been a popular topic the last few days. Nick Caserio was asked about it this morning during his appearance with Payne and Pendergast. He brought up a name, Jordan Addison, Biletnikoff winner, wide receiver out of Pittsburgh, now at USC, who's getting how much? $3.5 million. Here was Nick Caserio talking about Pitt wide receiver Jordan Addison.
I want to say the one receiver that's transferring from Pitt, Addison, right? He's one of the better receivers in the country.
Pretty good.
I think I was reading something the other day that, you know, he had a potentially NIL deal totaling or getting close to $3.5 million, which is a pretty, I mean, sizable amount. That's more than some second and third round draft picks are going to make. So, and again, it's not the player's fault. You certainly can't fault them for that. But how they handle everything that goes along with it, is that something that you have to be cognizant of? Absolutely. How does that factor in? Does it change their, I would say, their motivation, how they approach their sport, how they approach their position, how they approach improving as a player? They get caught up in sort of, you know, the monetary rewards. Now, I would say to conversely, monetarily, they might be in a position, maybe they're able to help, you know, people that have helped them along the way. Maybe their family dynamic or situation is such that, you know, really they've had a hard upbringing or a tough upbringing, and there's an opportunity for them to potentially not only take care of themselves, but maybe take care of people that are close to them.
There you go.
That was a great answer.
$3.5 million, though.
I have thoughts on that.
Give them to me, because I think it's important. And this is, like, I think perspective is always important when you're doing a discussion about something, you know, the old topic tree that we talk about. Mm-hmm. But I think it's especially important when you're talking about NIL and you're talking about college and you're talking about a kid leaving a school like Pittsburgh
mm-hmm.
and going to USC for $3.5 million. the good and bad of NIL, there's a lot of ground to cover when you start discussing this. Where do you look at this? Because this is, I don't want to say it's like a line in the sand, but you're talking about a kid who plays wide receiver, who's going to step on the field for USC in what, like 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
New system, et cetera, $3.5 million expectations, and all of a sudden he's going to USC with a first-year coach and all that type of stuff. He's getting $3.5 million. Good for him. Sucks for Pittsburgh. Interesting for USC. Where does your mind go when you take all this in?
I actually don't have a big problem with it. I really don't. I get there's going to be some bad elements to the NIL. It's going to make a lot of programs suffer that have been competitive on the recruiting trail just because of what they are and how they recruit and the coaches they have. They're going to be out of the game. But the NIL is going to reward players with what they're worth and what people can afford to pay and feel it is a smart investment. Whichever group of that, you've heard that term, collaborative, that word, the collaborative, however they're going to use his name, image, and likeness, they feel like it was worth it either in terms of wins and getting a little buzz out of their whatever company is endorsing them or whatever. I actually don't have a big problem with it. I like Nick Caserio's, just to get back to that, I like Nick Caserio's answer a lot. I think it's going to be very good for the NFL in terms of evaluating prospects too. How do they handle this? Do they go one way or the other in what they're doing? But as far as the NIL, it's what I think a lot of us have been encouraging, players being able to profit off of their talents, and people aren't going to pay them if they're not willing and able to pay them.
Well, I think there's also a two-way thing that I don't think is going to get covered too much, because I think this is going to be one of those things where the negative is focused on instead of the positive.
Yes.
Like when you talk about the transfer portal and you talk about the NIL, but you look at it from the perspective, and I think you have to look at it from all perspectives, but you look at it from Pittsburgh's perspective. Damn, they just lost their best player. They just lost one of the best players in the country,
mm-hmm.
and he went to big, bad USC, and he's getting $3.5 million, which is something Pitt would never be able to shell out.
Yeah.
Look at who Pittsburgh's starting quarterback is, though, this year. It's Keaton Slovis from USC. He couldn't cut it at USC. He wasn't getting the job done, but because the transfer portal's there, he can go to Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
And follow up Kenny
exactly.
Pickett. So it works both ways.
Like, yes.
The guys who go to USC and they don't reach that standard, they're able to then go to Pittsburgh and take it a step back, maybe decrease the pressure and get mm-hmm. a second opportunity, but that's not what you're going to hear about. You're just going to hear about this guy got $3.5 million, USC is dirty, and poor Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh's actually dipped into the USC on the other hand. And it can work well for both sides. The small schools can take advantage of this as well. We're just not going to hear about that because it's going to be the focus on the negative of it.
I totally agree, and that's my point. You know, other programs are going to benefit as well, even though it's not recruiting a player with the—
Yeah, it's not going to get the $3.5 million headline.
But you're going to get also the opportunity to play. The players benefit not just like, I might not be getting as much money going to Pitt, but I have an opportunity to start and help my status as a draft prospect. So there's money involved there just on the back end, so to speak.
Yeah, it's just it's one of those things where, you know, this guy gets $3.5 million. How does he handle it? Who knows? Maybe he puts it in the bank, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden, if this guy doesn't make the NFL, then he has that money for him. I'm not too concerned about it. The rich are going to get richer. That was going to happen anyways.
It was happening.
But there is an opportunity here where if guys don't make it big time, then the transfer portal can benefit. And guys can transfer from, you know, USC down to Pitt or, you know, all over the place. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of options. And I think it's good for kids to be able to maximize their earning potential.
Yeah.
And also be able to change their mind. Good God, there's so many kids that go to college at 18 or whatever, and mm-hmm. they don't even, the hell, I transferred.
Right.
It's good for the kids to have options. It's good for all this. There's going to be negative. That's what you're going to hear about. But there's also a lot of positive.
What is Arch Manning worth? It's Cooper Manning's son, Arch, number one quarterback recruit in the country.
Yeah.
I think he's going to decide between Georgia, Texas, and Alabama.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, he's going to Alabama.
He's probably going to Alabama. What's he worth?
Like in this market?
If Addison got $3.5 million for one year.
A wide receiver that's going to be on campus in 3 years.
For 1 year.
Yeah.
Versus Arch Manning, yes, that Manning family, for 3 years at a major program.
I don't know.
$10 million?
I have no idea. I mean, it's more than three and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I can tell you.
Yeah. And I don't mind it. I still don't mind. They're going to benefit by his talent, by his, you know, the wins that he produces, by his marketing, you know, ability, the exposure, and they wouldn't pay it if they couldn't.
The beauty for him is that's just going to go straight in the bank.
Yeah, come on now. He's got $10 million in there already. He's gonna But he's a $10 million player, I'll bet you.
Yeah, probably. And that was probably part of the Saban thing. You know, you're talking about Booster. Bryce Young's about to go to the NFL after this year. Arch Manning, come on down. There it is. Like it's very easy to see that. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. We focus a lot on the bad stuff with the NIL, but it does work both ways. That was interesting. Nick Caserio brought that up earlier today during his meeting with Payne and Pendergast. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Deshaun Watson's lawyer, he ain't going to sleep well tonight.
Mm-mm-mm.
He'll tell you why next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Rusty Harden, attorney for Deshaun Watson, he ain't going to sleep well tonight. Goodness gracious. Tomorrow, HBO Real Sports, Bryant Gumbel, going to interview a couple of the accusers along with Tony Busby. Rusty Harden says he's not holding his breath. He doesn't anticipate this being a very favorable.
It won't be. Spoiler alert.
Production for Deshaun Watson. This is Rusty Harden talking about the process and everything that's gone on up to this point in regards to Deshaun Watson.
The meeting with the NFL has now been concluded. We have not said this publicly, but now that they're over, we have talked to the NFL for a total of 3 days so far. I think by the time this is over, these will be the longest interviews in the history of the NFL of anybody that they're investigating. They've indicated they want to continue to do some more questioning. And so that portion is still ongoing because as of yesterday, they felt like they hadn't gone through everyone. So that's pending. I don't have a deadline. I suspect that the NFL wants to conclude their investigation sometime this summer, but whether that is June or whether that's August or July, I have no idea. That's their schedule.
All right, that's the Between the Lines podcast. Rusty Harden there, the HBO special tomorrow.
They're gonna have a ruling before August. So I don't know how many more interviews are left for the NFL. But the 3 days of Deshaun questioning still is very telling. It might not
3 days?
Yeah,
that's a long time.
That's what I'm saying. That's very, very telling. I've gone from one side to the other on this in terms of the number of games that he's going to be.
Where are you at?
I think it's going to be 8 or more, maybe the entire season. I really do. And I thought it would be under 8. I thought it'd be about 4 or 6. Just because of the outside pressure. It doesn't matter what's right or wrong. It's what they feel are being perceived.
Whole season?
Maybe. Would you bet against it?
Yeah. I would bet against it, like if I had to make a bet, yeah.
Like a nickel?
$50?
Well, see, that's
yeah, I don't think he's getting suspended for the whole season. That would be wild.
Would you bet a gur, as you say?
No, I wouldn't put a G on it because
mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's really no precedent. It's a new process. Like we keep hearing all these comparisons about Zeke Elliott and all that, but it is a new process. But a season, like for a situation in which there's no criminal charges.
Yes, I could see it happening. Mike Florio has been on top of this. You know, he's an attorney, so he's been on top of it. And he keeps going back to the same thing, and he's not wrong. You know, Roger Goodell's reputation on these matters has been less than sterling, how he's handled them. And now you've got so much more of a visible, you know, player, probably the most visible since Ben, Zeke maybe, but he's more, you know, and you've mishandled those in terms of the public perception. Now, whatever you felt, you know, you felt. But then you felt the backlash. I don't think he's willing to do that again.
See, this is where, like, when we talk about optics, and I know 92.3 The Fan, our sister station out there in Cleveland, they start out the show with, like, does Deshaun Watson come across as tone deaf when it comes to taking the team to the Bahamas with this going on? I don't expect Deshaun to change his life, like, based on what's going on, because he says that he didn't do anything wrong and he has no regrets and all that type of stuff. But if I am the NFL, like, and they can say that there's like some sort of, you know, robotic process in it, but human emotion is going to come into play.
Exactly.
And the perception does matter. Like, the press conference was a disaster that Deshaun Watson had. That was awful.
Mm-hmm.
He handled that about as bad as you could possibly handle
no
it.
No regrets.
Yeah, the no regrets, that quote. The Bahamas thing, that was an absolute disaster. Some would say the contract was kind of a bad look. The fact that you negotiate
the
a record-setting contract before your next contract even kicks in.
And you got the $1 million for the first year,
yes,
but $46 for the second.
Yeah, despite the fact you hadn't even played on your new contract that you signed like a year and change ago. I do wonder if like those things come into play when it comes to making a decision about the suspension. If they do, then you might be right.
Yeah,
where we're talking eight or more.
Because he's flaunting it, you know, whether he really is or not. He might truly believe all this and then think it's any big deal. But the perception is, you're going to the Bahamas, dude, really? You could have done that in Houston, you know, whatever.
Or Cleveland.
Or Cleveland or wherever. But the perception of flaunting it is what's going to end up making the end. He's kind of pushing the NFL into a corner, backing him into a corner. Like, yeah, I don't care. Nothing's happening here. I mean, to me, so there. And then they realize that the potential backlash is, and they might actually, you know, escalate a little bit.
It's kind of getting like intense up there in Cleveland. Kind of getting a pulse of it. It does seem like there's a lot more. I don't want to say defending Deshaun Watson, but there's they've kind of been able to gather all of the information and the cases and all that type of stuff. And
it's polarizing.
Yeah. So I do wonder, like, and if you want to like. I know Twitter's a dangerous place regardless, but now when like a Deshaun Watson story comes out, Figgy, you know this better than me. Like, you read the comments.
Oh.
Dude, the dog pound's coming out for Deshaun, and it is nasty when the dog pound comes out for you. Like, they're the Deshaun Watson defense, there's still like the usual, like,
they're starting to attack the people that's against Deshaun.
Now. Yes.
Yes. The dog pound is nasty on that internet. On those internet streets, and I'm not sitting here saying how you should or shouldn't be, because again, if I were Cleveland, this is the only way I have of saying this as far as what did or didn't happen. I would have traded for him.
Yeah,
I would have traded for Deshaun Watson. I would have felt comfortable trading for Deshaun Watson. Now, the perception and stuff that you have to deal with, that's still a whole nother element, and it can intensify. And facts don't matter a lot of times with that, and we don't know all the facts what really did happen. But I still would have made the trade. But damn, it is intense in those internet streets when it comes to the side coming after Deshaun Watson and the side now defending Deshaun, about as nasty, as defensive and intense as you can possibly see.
And the NFL offices, are they realize that. You know, the thing about Rusty and what he's talking about, and we'll hear more from Rusty tomorrow, but like when he goes to a court, he lays out, these are the facts, these are the interviews, this is the testimony, now judge on that. The NFL.
And he's already been winning that. He's won that twice.
And he's won. But I'll channel Stanford Rout here. Guess what? That doesn't matter to the NFL. None of that matters to the NFL. It's how are we going to look? What's going to be the backlash here? What's it going to cost us? Et cetera, et cetera. So like Rusty is in a realm where he's and I you know, you and I have listened to some of it, where he's saying, well, I hope they don't do this because the facts state this. It doesn't matter. It's what the look is more than what the facts say.
And I don't want to make an absolute statement about something like this, but you always hear about like precedent and what goes on. And next time, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it just doesn't seem like this is like, regardless of what did or didn't happen, it just doesn't seem like a sane, level thinking person would put themselves in the situation Deshaun Watson currently finds himself in. That's not to say he did anything illegal. That's not to say anything, but I don't think we're going to find a situation where 2 years from now we're like, oh, well, this guy has 22 accusers. Remember what happened when Deshaun had 22 accusers against him? Like,
well, there is that factor too.
Yeah. Like, I don't feel like this is like some sort of new norm. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that's the whole thing. Like, when you start talking about regrets and stuff, like there's got to be like some sort of process or something like that to where this doesn't happen. So this is like, if an athlete, like let's say an athlete gets an assault charge, and Roger Goodell and the NFL are having to decide about how to handle that, chances are that maybe a year or two from now there will be something that you can compare that to. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn. Maybe this is going to be something that happens more often. I just find it hard to believe that the new norm is going to be this guy has 22 accusers all of a sudden.
Well, see, you just touched on something that's even more important for the NFL. Like, there is precedent in the legal system, and it's in writing, and that's what other attorneys in other cases kind of base their defense or their prosecution on, actual legal precedent. The NFL doesn't want to set the NFL precedent on Deshaun Watson by being lied on him. You know, like, because there's going, I think one thing we know for sure, there are going to be other players in the NFL that run into off-field trouble.
Yeah.
And if you say Deshaun Watson, 22 accusers, yeah, sexual misconduct, no matter what the legal system said, we'll give him 4 games.
Yeah.
That's a precedent that other, you know, in the future, the NFL, you know, is going to have to live with.
See, in my ideal world, like, I, the NFL needs to figure out what a catch is and how to handle overtime.
Yeah.
And the teams can deal with the smoke that they want to deal with. I don't trust the NFL to figure out all their
rules.
But
that's not the case.
But it's not the case. Yeah. And that's the business that they've got in. And yeah, that's where you get the slippery slope. On the text line, 713-572-4610, the 832 says, once Watson plays, none of this will matter. I disagree completely.
Yeah.
I actually think the more success Deshaun Watson has, the more smoke there is, the more opportunity. I disagree completely with that. Every time he's on the field, you're telling me there's not going to be a graphic up there, mm-hmm, of like the timeline, and that's not going to be the dialogue?
Especially like in big games in the postseason.
Yeah. So yeah. I disagree wholeheartedly that, you know, winning cures all and all that.
It does for the dog pound.
For the dog pound, yeah. For Cleveland, well, Cleveland's already in.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to speak. Cleveland's in, right, Figgy? Like, they're ready for Watson to go.
Yeah.
Well, they should be. Best quarterback they've had.
But they're going to get the heat, and they're going to read about it and hear about it and watch it.
And right? I think you'll still get people like Busby who will put something out there, you know, whenever the timeline is kind of slow.
Yeah, Busby.
It's going to ramp up.
Yeah, but it's going to be 1 year of Busby. And let's just be honest. Like, let's say the Browns are the best team in the NFL during the Super Bowl. You're telling me during that 2-week gap, there's not going to be like explosive stuff going on,
right,
with Deshaun? Is it right? I don't know. Is it a representation of like what people think media is now? Maybe so, but it's there. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about branding and you're talking about perception and you're talking about stuff that, you know, people that make the money that NFL owners, et cetera, make, that's the risk they knew they were willing to take.
Right.
Like, it's not like the Browns just, like, there's a reason that the Texans, and I think they got as much as they could, but there's a reason that they didn't get even more for Deshaun Watson.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah, the trade, the no trade clause, mm-hmm, and other stuff, like, there's a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew what they were signing up for. Even then, I don't know if they've like, I don't know that the Browns regret it. I doubt they regret it. But there is like a sense of arrogance maybe where you kind of underestimate just what's going to be coming. And it starts tomorrow, Real Sports, HBO,
you
with
literally,
Brian Gumbel.
You truly don't know how, you know, what direction it's going to go. You might have a sense of it. You might have, you know, some thoughts about it. But until it happens, you don't know. And you also don't know what other chips are going to fall, such as did they think when they got Deshaun Watson, yeah, I bet you HBO Real Sports is going to do an interview with some of the victims. I mean, all these things just happen, and then you have to deal with them, and that's what the NFL is in right now.
Clint in the show, follow us up. One half
Hello,
of
show.
The show, Ron the Show Hughley, is in the building.
You know, I'm glad you're talking about this because I was listening to you on the drive in discussing this a little bit, the Deshaun situation, and I said I want to ask them this during Crosstalk.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us, Clint. I want to ask you this during Crosstalk. You think the Trevor Bauer decision,
yes,
has, how much do you think this has impact on the NFL? I mean, you know, the NFL likes, hey, we're the NFL, we do our things the way. But Trevor Bauer, one person made accusations towards him, no criminal charges. And he's got 2 years of baseball. Yeah. Is that on top of what he already missed?
100%. And you walked in after I mentioned this to Landry. There is legal precedent that has nothing to do with what the NFL precedent is going to be. Yeah. The NFL doesn't want to be set the precedent of 22 accusers, just a civil case, nothing proved. We'll give them four games. They don't want anything to. They don't want to be known as the league that is doing that, because then one thing we know about the NFL. There are going to be other players have off-field issues. So then you're setting a precedent for those players to go to the commissioner's office after they're accused of whatever and say, look, you only gave Deshaun 4 games.
Like, we talked about this, Clint, just comparing Trevor Bauer won, you know, 346 games and 22, you know, what, both of them. I mean, you can't even look at Trevor. He wasn't accused. I mean, he wasn't found guilty.
Yeah.
He's innocent too. Like, you just, the thought of Major League Baseball being this much harder and taking this, and it may not be true, but taking this more serious than the NFL, I wonder how much that plays a part in this thing.
I think it's got to be huge, right? Yeah. I mean, whether we're talking about inside the NFL with Lisa Friel and her team making the decision for the first time with that change in the CBA, or we're talking about professional sports, the entire, you know, spectrum of professional sports and one league clearly making a statement with Trevor Bauer, right. And then you don't want to be the league that then follows it up with being extremely soft on a case that's golly boy, hard to explain. So yeah, look, I think the pressure on Lisa Friel in the NFL right now is absolutely through the roof, and the special that's going to air tomorrow night way, shape, or form is going to help that.
No,
that,
it's not.
I also wonder, like, when you talk about like sticking your chest out, going to, you know, the Bahamas and stuff. Like, Bauer was pretty intense with his whole, you know, attack of the accuser and whatnot. I wonder how much that came into play.
No,
I don't know. I mean, who knows? That whole thing is weird. Beyond weird. This whole Deshaun Watson thing is really, really strange. Cleveland's dealing with what they're dealing with. What do you guys got on the show today?
Oh, man, we got a few things. We'll look at that thing with Deshaun and see how big a deal that is. And Nick Caserio spoke, obviously, earlier today on Payne and Pendergast and had some comments about their top pick that could concern some. We'll discuss a little bit of that. And Lance McCullers. Luxury Lance, another update on Lance.
John McClain first pitches in front of the rubber. Congratulations.
Congratulations. See if we can get Clint feel a little bit better about Lance McCullers.
I do not. I think Landry hit the nail. He might end up being right. It may not even be August. I mean, you called August, right? I mean, I don't even know if that's going to be enough time.
When is he going to throw? When is he going to throw a curveball?
He's too smart.
Oh, baby.
He's too smart to push it. That's the thing. I don't like Lance McCullers. When you hear him talk about it, he almost sounds like a damn doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm at 72% right now. We'll probably try to get up to 86 in June. And, you know, I got to get at the right angle and stuff like that. Like, he is in no damn hurry to get out there.
No.
The good thing is he's got a little bit of time.
He's got a little.
These youngsters are pitching in his soft schedule over the last
and
month.
And two more series that are very winnable on the way. Yep. Yeah.
How bad is this McClain first pitch going to go on the 12th?
That's what I was going to ask you. I heard the other day you get your campaign cranked up of Nixon his thing. Or
I
what?
Can't talk him out of this. I am really. I'm kind of like really scared about this.
I am too, man. I feel much worse about this than I did the free throw.
Yeah.
What this odds? Three of you guys. Something just occurred to me. This is important. What odds would you have to bet on McClain falling?
That's the thing that's scary, because Clint brought that up Friday. I could see him tripping and fall. Oh, God, I don't want to see this.
I don't want to see it either. What kind of odds?
I mean, he's not going to fall. Come on, man. He's got a wide base.
Yeah, but when has he been off balance like that?
He doesn't strike me as a deep top hit. He does struggle with those stools that we have on location.
He's quit them. He's quit them, bad. But he's standing behind him now.
He's getting off both legs and on the line.
I wish you hadn't brought that up, because now I'm thinking about McClain falling.
He's just got. It's got to be just a real elbowy.
Just
kind
can't
of
do too much.
Just flick, right?
Yeah, just like flick.
I heard you guys, somebody, I was like, no, it's not that bad, guys. And then McClain comes in there, big city wings, and he sits down and he goes, "I'm gonna get my old glove out of the storage." And he said, "I'm gonna throw that thing over the top. I'm gonna come way over the top." And I said, "No." I mean, look, this is gonna be as compact an action as you can possibly create, and just an elbow flip it up there.
Throw it, man. Just throw
don't
it.
Don't wind
up
and,
there. Who cares, man? Let's get out of here injury free. That's got to be the goal. Injury free, man. He's got the rotator cuff situation.
Yes.
Come on, man.
We got to move McClain back tomorrow to 11 because he's got to go to minicamp. There has never been anyone worse at retiring than John McClain.
He's going to minicamp.
Going to minicamp.
He's a better tweeter.
Yeah, he is.
Since he retired, yeah, that's what I told him.
Yeah, John told us he had like 11 radio hits last week as he's retiring.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Clint Sterner, Ron the Show Hughley coming up right after us. The concern for John McClain is real.
It is real. I wish he hadn't mentioned that. Now I'm thinking about him falling.
Yeah.
It's possible. Does he have to go up the dugout, or is he going to just come?
No, they come
seats?
Out the gold, whatever it's called.
Okay, because if he has to go up the dugout steps, then I'll give you odds. Like straight up, if he's got to come up that. I want him
the
in
diamond
full
club or whatever. It's
we
got
to get him in full baseball uniform.
That would be sweet.
No, I'm
like a Babe Ruth uniform.
Yeah, I want a full baseball uniform for him.
Yeah,
like why's he got to be Babe Ruth? Why can't he be Barry
like
Bonds?
Old school.
Why can't he be Barry Bonds or Jeff Bagwell? Why's he got to be Babe Ruth?
Because he looks a little race bit. Car! No, it's not race. It ain't race. It ain't that. Or maybe like Wilfred Brimley in the
who?
Wilfred Brimley in what was that movie? The Natural. The Manager.
He's not fat. Well, I mean, he's big.
Come on, man. You guys are something else. By the way, we're going to have an intervention with him. Another guy who got inducted to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, Randy Galloway, going to talk to McLean about.
That's going
to
be sweet.
A lot of things. He'll talk about that Facing Nolan doc that you saw.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like you weren't the biggest fan of it.
No, I was. I was.
Yeah, I was.
That didn't come across great. Yeah, I feel like you thought there was something wrong with it.
I like the content a lot.
Okay.
I like the content a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
But?
No, I like the content a lot. All I know is Olivia Wilde's a better director.
We'll talk to McLean tomorrow. We'll talk to Michael Jenkins as well about how we can get Degenerate Gambling Lopez his next fix. Thanks to Kevin Bowen for hopping on the Flying Fish Restaurant Hotline.
Kevin!
Let us know what the hell's going on in Indianapolis. Thanks to Nick Casario, the Hardo, for hopping on with Payne and Pendergast this morning at 7:30 a.m. If you missed that, fire up the Odyssey app. If you don't have the Odyssey app, the hell are you doing with your life? Tomorrow, John McLean and Jenkins join the show. We'll dive
by
into
the way, I want to say something.
What's happening on the field with the Texans, as well as many other things. For the OG John Lopez, for Figgy Fig being the best in the world at what he do, I'm Landry Locker. This has been another edition of In the Loop. Manana, 10 a.m. But in the meantime, Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley are next.
How I wish that you were.
Thank you, Figgy.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.